When I first started looking at Spain's wine revolution back around 2000, there were a handful of regions leading the pack, like Rioja or Ribera del Duero, and then a whole slew of others which were showing promise of a brighter future, but that was about it. Where it was all going was still quite a bit of a mystery, and since then, some have flourished while others have kind of floundered, and we'll talk about those ones on a different occasion. But the ones that have done well have erupted onto the national scene and even in some cases the international scene. I've already mentioned a couple of them, like Bierzo and its red wine made from Mencia, or Toro and its powerful but elegant reds. And then you have Reda, which has taken the white wine market in big places like Madrid by storm with its very popular Verdejos. But then there are others which have done remarkably well, and they've even taken me by surprise, not so much because they weren't capable of making good wine, because obviously they were, but because of the traditional business strategy, which for years had been causing much of the Spanish wine sector to lag behind other countries. And so, 20, 25 years ago, there was plenty of skepticism about their future. How would they be able to adapt to modern times? And these ones have done very well. Two that come to mind are Campo de Borja and Calatayud, which are located about halfway between Madrid and Barcelona, just to give you a general idea, in the region of Aragon, and more specifically in the province of Zaragoza. There are actually four DOs in Aragon. The other two are Somontano and Garinyena, but I'll devote some time to them in a different episode. Campo de Borja and Calatayud have done very well for themselves for very similar reasons, which is why I'm pairing them today. You see, over the past 10 or 15 years, possibly even 20, they have grown in popularity exponentially, thanks mainly to their red wine made from the grape variety Garnacha or Grenache, and especially the old vine Garnacha, which allows us to get the very best of this variety. But before we get to the wine, let's quickly talk a little bit about the two regions. Campo de Borja has its vineyards around or near a town called Borja. So the name actually means sort of the countryside of Borja. And now that we're at it, let me tell you that this happens to be the original land or homeland of the famous, or infamous rather, Borgia family we mostly associate with immoral and underhanded activity in Renaissance Italy. They were a very powerful clan at that time, and two members actually went on to become pope. The name Borgia is simply an Italianized name for Borja, which is where this family apparently originally came from. Anyway, the town is not far from a famous and legendary mountain called Moncayo, and some of the vineyards actually reach the rolling foothills of that noble and proud peak. Borja is an old town, and it's generally believed that winemaking came there formerly with the Cistercian monks, when they built a famous monastery there called Veruela. This place stands in literature as a place where the famous romantic writer Adolfo Bécquer stayed and wrote some of his famous works. It can still be visited today, and work is being done on it. Actually, they've been working on it for many, many years, and to turn it into a Parador Nacional, which is one of those beautiful state-run hotels, often located or using old historical sites from Spain, castles, palaces, or monasteries like this one. Anyway, getting back to the subject, wine has a long history here too, as we know. But during the 20th century, which is sort of what we're really interested in looking at, just like much of Aragon's winemaking tradition, Campo de Borja relied heavily on mass-produced wine made at co-ops, cooperatives, and sold rather anonymously abroad, and much of it in bulk. And why was this done? Well, basically because the philosophy behind winemaking and grape growing back then was much more practical and far less focused on marketing a product that would appeal to modern taste and modern consumers. It was a staple product in the diet of many Spaniards, especially those who lived in villages and small towns. And you made your wine, you sold it, and you got rid of it because you didn't want it hanging around. Now, you could sell it at home, but a lot of it went in bulk, actually truckloads of wine sent off to distant lands where it was bottled and often sold as table wine with no mention of its origin. So there was no finesse here. We're not going to beat around the bush. Let's be clear about it from the very beginning. Whatever wine that wasn't sold in bulk would be sold in large containers, maybe 5-liter containers for locals, or maybe 1-liter bottles. And basically, that's just the way it was done back then. Wine consumption was probably at an all-time high then, but its purpose was to accompany a meal, maybe a glass or two, but every day. And the everyday consumer wasn't going to spend an arm and a leg on fancy wine. Cooperatives were a good solution for grape growers looking for an outlet for their fruit and a place which would take care of the winemaking and its sale. And that pretty much summed up business there for many, many years. It worked generally for the people. They wanted to get rid of their wine and make a little money out of it. And it basically made sense. There was really no need to make their lives any more complicated. Now, what spurred them on to changing that frame of mind? A big part of it had to do with changing drinking habits. Wine consumption has dropped steadily over the decades, at least as a daily drink, but quality wine consumption has risen, as has the threshold for the consumer in terms of price. In other words, people are willing to pay more, and in some cases a lot more, for a bottle of wine because it's not something they're going to be drinking every day. Now, since the 2000s, okay, the early 2000s, there has been a notable switch towards producing well-balanced, amazing garnachas, especially from these regions. Winemakers are emphasizing the old vine provenance of the grapes, much in the same way Priorat has, but with one big difference being that these wines, the ones from Aragon, come at a much more reasonable price. And the interesting and ironic thing about it is that some of these newfangled garnacha wines actually come from wineries that are cooperatives in disguise. And by that I mean that the name itself can't be associated with a co-op the way many are. They often use the name of the local patron saint or the local patron Virgin Mary. So it's often easy to identify a co-op. And for many years, and somewhat deservedly, these winemaking associations earned a reputation for making ho-hum wine. Nothing special, and it would be cheap, but it was really nothing to write home about. But if you came up with this name, which was different and which didn't sound like a cooperative, and then on top of that, you came up with a good wine, well, things worked very well. A perfect example of that in Campo de Borja would be the Borsao wines. Those are B-O-R-S-A-O. I mentioned them because you find them in a lot of different places, and they've been one of the bigger success stories of this turnaround that I was telling you about. Something similar happened to Calatayud. This region gets its name from the town in the western part of Aragon. If you take the highway from Madrid to Barcelona, before you get to Zaragoza, the city, It's off to your left. Calatayud was definitely a Roman town. In fact, it was probably settled before that by the Celts or the Iberians. And it was a fairly important one. It went by the name of Bilbilis, and it was there that the Roman poet Martial was born. He was well known for writing couplets or two-lined poems, often sarcastic or ironic in tone, and they were known as epigrams. And then the Moors came in and made it one of their strongholds because of its strategic location. And then when the Christians took over, they did pretty much the same thing. Now, today, Calatayud is famous for its Moorish architecture known as Mudéjar. In fact, much of Aragon has excellent examples of it, and as well as its wine, which has taken a very similar route to Campo de Borja. In other words, a co-op dominated region which has taken wine shops by storm for its rich and reasonable Garnacha red wine. And both regions are doing incredibly well. Now, just what is this Garnacha that so many are talking about, and why is it getting so much attention? What's it like? Well, first of all, you should know that Garnacha is a variety, a classic Spanish variety. It is the third most widely planted grape variety in the country, after Tempranillo, obviously, and I think Bobal. But it's just one of those classic grape varieties. And for years, it served more of a secondary role. It was a kind of a workhorse wine for Spanish reds, often used in blending, as it didn't always do well on its own. It sort of tended to oxidize if you weren't careful. And now, more careful vinification techniques, along with the concentrated fruit of the old vines, have helped to hoist this grape to a level of unquestionable respectability. Garnacha is a medium-bodied red, quite fruity too. Its wines are generally not too acidic, nor are they very tannic. They are sometimes described as being deceptively light-colored. Some have called them sort of the Pinot Noir of the South, but that probably refers more to the French Grenache versions, whereas the Spanish Garnachas do sort of have a deeper color. But it is true that they aren't too heavy, they aren't overbearing, enjoyable bouquet, easy on the palate, and the result is often a great red wine that comes at a great value. Both regions also make some interesting rosés, which are getting more attention, as well as a white wine, though they play a much smaller role in the area. But don't turn your nose up at them. You know, I always encourage exploring. But the real star here and the real choice here, for sure, at least for Calatayud and Campo de Borja, are the red wines made from Garnacha. And that will be all for this episode of Let's Open a Bottle, the podcast, the story of Spain's wine revolution. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please feel free to send us comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Cheers, or salud, as they say in Spain. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.